across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota up here in Chippewa County, where it's another beautiful day up north, albeit a bit overcast and little bit on the chilly side. 60 degrees in Chippewa Falls on our home base, 93.5 The Tap. Lots of you listening on the Shaw, where it's 55 degrees in Waukesha, and lots of folks in town for the Harley-Davidson homecoming. Some very hardy souls braving the rain and other conditions to come to the big party in Milwaukee. Welcome to Wisconsin. We hope you have an awesome time. Folks listening to Mad Radio in Madison, 60 degrees by you, 54 in Wisconsin Rapids, 57 up in Hayward, Platteville, and Fond du Lac both reporting 61 degrees at 6 o'clock in the morning on this Thursday, July 13th. Here's what's on tap this morning. We're going to start with a study in contrasts. Tom Tiffany versus Gwen Moore. The Republican Congressman Tom Tiffany used his time in a Judiciary Committee hearing yesterday to pepper the director of the FBI with a rehashing of conspiracy theories and excuses for the January 6th insurrectionists. And by contrast, Gwen Moore has been helping colleagues or been helping constituents understand the benefits of Medicare, finally being able to negotiate for lower prices with the big pharmaceutical companies. Joseph Pecky is going to tell us more about that coming up later this hour. In our second hour, Iowa's sad slide for women. In the middle of the night Tuesday, Iowa Republicans rushed through a near total abortion ban, and we will talk to an obstetrician gynecologist there about the impact on her patients and on Iowa women. Then at 7:30, Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us with a family physician from the Kickapoo Valley, Dr. Joel Charles, who will tell us how everyone can play a direct role in making sure that new pollution standards for power plants and vehicles are not weakened by industry lobbyists. So a lot of ground to cover today along the way. If you've got any questions or comments, you can ring us up at 844-967-2789. Aaron Zommers joins us from Madison as well, because I have a little civic media work to do here. And I know that down there, they've been talking a lot about the Civic Pints promo. When you hear Civic Pints, you're thinking maybe beer. No, sir, this is about blood.
Although maybe someday we'll do one about beer.
I'm not opposed to that. Don't get me wrong.
Me either.
But yeah, but Civic Pints, and that's the hashtag here, is all about the new statewide blood donation challenge. Are you a regular donor yourself, Mr. Zommers?
I am not, because medically I'm not supposed to. Otherwise, I would.
Oh, well, see, now you've got a valid excuse. That works for me. And then those of us who are O negative really need to step up and do that. So with that said, let me tell you more about the statewide blood donation challenge from Civic Pints. It runs from now until July 31st, so now through the end of the month, because the state of Wisconsin, much like the rest of the country, especially in the summertime, faces a severe shortage in our blood banks. Everyone's help is needed, because any one of us could be in the sudden need for blood. And without people donating, it just wouldn't be there. So the blood donation challenge isn't just a feel-good thing. You can win prizes as well. And it's really easy to enter. Just go give blood at a blood donation center. Put up a selfie with a hashtag. The hashtag is Civic Pints, as in pint of blood. So Civic Pints is the hashtag. Put up that blood donation selfie and you'll be entered to win a pair of Brewers tickets. There's a pair of tickets to the Wisconsin State Fair. There's more than 100 packs of Civic Media swag and more. So just go to civicmedia.us, and then there you can get the directions to go to the Give Blood page, or just go to civicmedia.us/giveblood. And just remember to take that selfie, post it to Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, and then the Civic Media team will contact you with all the details on finishing up your entry. So give that a go. All right, our newsletter is out for Up North News as it comes out about 5 a.m. on weekdays, and Christina Laurie put together today's newsletter that includes the top reasons why Wisconsin applicants fail on their background checks for gun purchases, She also talks about the details of an upcoming Art of Cheese Festival. And you can sign up for the newsletter on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Upnorth News being a separate entity from Civic Media, though we are thoroughly happy to be here this time every morning to tell you what's happening over at Upnorth News. As I was looking at the news wires and things to share with you this morning, we have a lot of serious news basically coming up from 6:15 onward. So I wanted to share a couple of lighter notes real quick. The Chautauqua Alert, Chautauqua being just about 25 minutes north of here or so. Nice photo of a visitor from Illinois. He's legally blind. He has cerebral palsy, but it's a picture of him and the beautiful 25-inch walleye that he caught out there on the chain of lakes. Something, you know, when your local newspaper is the type that puts up, you know, the nice fishing photos, that's when you know you live in a pretty sweet place. And there's a lot of that going on here up north. And in Eau Claire, the Volume 1 newspaper has a really nice tribute article about my friend John Murphy, who is a local legend in Chippewa Valley radio, and is in fact as nice a guy in person as he is on the radio. And I was very privileged to work with him for a time in the 90s at Wax and Way. So if you have any connection to the Chippewa Valley or know of John Murphy, there's a good article in there on Volume 1 about John Murphy getting a big new statewide award for his many years of service. Let's pause. We'll take a break here and then hear more about what's happened on Capitol Hill in Washington yesterday. It was rather embarrassing. Details next. You're up north. Dobre utro, comrades. It's time we make for Russian benefit of news from the United States for comrades Tom Tiffany and Ron Johnson. The glorious congressional man from what they call up north is again coming to the defense of the senator who has never been popular but continues to have significant infusions of corporate cash, which is very funny because Russian money was illegally funneled through the NRA for political ads that benefited Republican politicians like Ron Johnson a few years ago. But we digress. All right, here's the deal. A congressional committee yesterday grilled the FBI director, Christopher Wray, a Republican. A Republican appointed by Donald Trump. Appointed by Donald Trump after Donald Trump fired James Comey because Comey was looking into Russian ties, all the Russian outreach to the 2016 Trump campaign. But the grilling of Christopher Wray was actually done by Trump Republicans who are still unhappy that so much was uncovered about contacts between members of the Trump campaign and the Russian operatives trying to help Trump defeat Hillary Clinton in 2016. So yesterday's House Judiciary Committee meeting featured more conspiracies and more paranoia than any non-paranoid person should ever be exposed to. And if you had to take a drink every time you heard laptop, Hunter Biden, Crossfire Hurricane, or the Durham Report, you'd be dead. But let's get to the point of this hearing. The point of this hearing, of course, was not for information or oversight, but to publicly stoke distrust of the FBI, the nation's premier law enforcement agency. Coming from the same law and order Republicans who love to talk about backing the blue, but then they also talk about defunding the FBI. It was, I would contend, one of the more shameful days in a Congress that has seen its fair share of low water marks. Seriously, Vladimir Putin could only dream of having so much success in undermining American law enforcement and politicizing the attempt to keep foreign influence out of American elections. I would not have exposed myself to it yesterday for 5 hours were it not for the fact that two Wisconsin Republicans are on the committee. Now, Scott Fitzgerald, to his credit, I guess, asked some fairly benign questions about FBI improvements that have already been made since the so-called Durham report. But then there's Congressman Tom Tiffany, who could be using his time to connect northern Wisconsinites to federal resources or make health care more affordable or ensure the next farm bill is good to farm families rather than multinational conglomerates. But no, Tom Tiffany, who in the hours after the riot on January 6th still voted to object to some of the legally cast votes. The same Tom Tiffany who signed a document of support of a Texas lawsuit that sought to have your 2020 election results overturned in Wisconsin. The same Tom Tiffany who voted no on a resolution of support for NATO's efforts to help Ukraine defend itself against Russia. The same Tom Tiffany who once said he doesn't know if he would have voted to support U.S. efforts to help Great Britain defend itself against the Nazis in 1940 and 41. That's the Tom Tiffany whose fixation yesterday was on parroting Donald Trump's line that Russian efforts to help Trump in 2016 were just a hoax. Here he is referencing the Durham report named for the Trump investigation into the investigators of Russian collusion. That report did find fault with some FBI practices that have long since been addressed, as Christopher Wray points out. But it's Tiffany's twisted interpretation that this somehow proves the FBI interfered in the last two presidential elections, not Mother Russia.
So in the Durham report, and we heard from Mr. Durham just a couple weeks ago, he said the FBI failed to uphold the important mission of strict fidelity to the law, and that predates you. Do you agree with that statement that Mr. Durham made?
Yes, I do.
Was Russia collusion a hoax? So in light of the Durham report was Russia collusion a hoax?
What I would say is this. One as to the Durham report itself, and one as to the issue of Russia malign influence. As to the Durham report itself,
be quick.
I will try. The conduct it describes is conduct that I consider unacceptable and unrepresentative of who I see the FBI is every day and must not ever be allowed to happen again.
And on the other side.
Second, on the other one, it is not seriously disputed that the Russians, among other foreign adversaries, have attempted to interfere in our elections. And there have been any number of findings to that. In fact, President Trump himself rightly declared a national emergency about foreign interference in our elections in 2018.
So as a result of the actions of James Comey, the disgraced James Comey, and the FBI, they've interfered with the elections in both 2016 and 2020. Will that interference happen again in 2024 by the FBI?
The FBI is not going to be interfering in elections.
They did in 2016.
Well, I don't know that that's what Mr. Durham found. What I would tell you again is that it was conduct that I consider unacceptable and unrepresentative.
You can be in denial if you want to.
I'm not in denial,
sir. You can be in denial on this. That's exactly what happened.
No, actually, Tom Tiffany, that's not exactly what happened. Russians were interfering in 2016. There were multiple contacts with Trump operatives or supporters, but Robert Mueller was not prepared to call it collusion because he thought Congress had to be the one to make such a serious call. But Trump's Attorney General, Bill Barr, purposefully twisted that to say the report itself said there was no collusion, but there was. And Ron Johnson was repeating Russian talking points meant to diminish American support for Ukraine in those years before Russia invaded. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence asked the FBI to give Ron Johnson what's called a defensive briefing to say, dude, here's what's really going on. You might want to do some homework before shooting off your mouth. Instead, Johnson, who's been particularly cozy about Russia ever since he spent the 4th of July 2018 there, claims he was being set up for what it's never been clear. But for Tiffany, it's some kind of conspiracy.
Last year, the FBI gave a defensive briefing to my home state Senator Johnson, and then that defensive briefing was leaked to the Washington Post. Who ordered that briefing?
Christopher Wray then explained the part about the Director of National Intelligence and the concerns about what Johnson was saying, but before he could make a broader point, Tiffany cut him off.
Defensive briefings, it's important to understand.
Senator Johnson, that's his quote. He's up there with you and Hunter Biden. I knew it was a setup. And he asked you this question back in November of last year, and he said, I knew it was a setup. And that goes back to the point about interfering in elections. Senator Johnson was one of the most vulnerable Republican incumbents, if not the most vulnerable Republican incumbent, that was a target of the Democrats in the 2022 election. And then you see this briefing happen, and he knew what was happening, that there was someone or some people within the FBI and the intelligence arena that were going after him.
Ah, yes, the Hunter Biden reference. Everybody take a drink. Always a conspiracy. Always somebody out to get you. It couldn't have been for the fact that maybe a lot of law enforcement actually leaned Republican and gave the defensive briefing to Johnson to help him because he's one of the vulnerable Republican incumbents. Oh, no. No, the conspiracy only goes one way. Never mind the actual evidence. It's always about the evidence that hasn't been presented yet, hasn't been found, but you know it's out there because people say it is. And that's why Congressman Tiffany ended with making claims about the president and playing this juvenile game with Christopher Wray about what is or isn't under investigation for a Ukrainian company, Burisma, at the center of the misinformation Ron Johnson and others were spreading.
Did Joe Biden take payments from Burisma or any other foreign companies as vice president, president, or private citizen Biden?
As you may know, there is an ongoing investigation being led by the U.S. attorney in Delaware, Mr. Weiss, appointed by President Trump in the last administration, that our Baltimore field office is working with, and I would refer you to him as to what, if anything, can be shared.
So the president is under, investigation.
I'm not going to confirm or speak to who is or isn't under investigation for what. I'm simply going to tell
you. So he's not under investigation?
I didn't say that either. By longstanding department policy and practice, I'm not going to be confirming or denying who is or isn't under investigation or for what.
Thank you.
Just again, juvenile. Aren't you exhausted? I am. It's why normal people stay away from this kind of day-to-day disinformation. It's why we don't traffic in it every day on this program. But every so often, like when half of a congressional committee tries to undercut the FBI director just to protect a corrupt politician on their team, we feel like we have to let you know what they're up to and hope that you don't get so tired of these games that you lose sight of whether Tom Tiffany and others like him should or should not be wasting your time and money with sideshows of the type we saw yesterday. I mean, the only reason I even thought to tune in was because Tiffany had a Twitter thread at 8 o'clock yesterday morning that was unhinged even by MAGA standards. It started with a doctored photo of Christopher Wray sitting on a throne with flames burning around him and a caption about how the FBI had become a Praetorian guard protecting wealthy elites over the American people, said the guy who supports trillions in tax breaks to the wealthy elites. And then what followed was more Orwellian doublespeak that makes it sound like law enforcement is picking on peaceful Americans who only want to air some grievances. Tiffany kind of left out the parts about intentionally spreading COVID misinformation, threatening school board members over COVID safeguards, killing doctors who provided abortion care, President Trump obstructing law enforcement over his stealing of classified documents with national security information, the aforementioned Russia collusion, and of course, Hunter Biden's laptop had to be included in this rambling ribbon of grievances. My guess is that the whole thread made more sense in its original Russian. As for Ron Johnson himself, he was on the Fox propaganda channel talking about Ukraine. Here's a clip about him explaining why he doesn't understand why Zelensky doesn't want to talk about peace anymore.
To your point, Senator, that's kind of what Griff sounded like at the end there, where he was talking about our president's going to sit down with Mr. Zelensky and they're going to have a straightforward conversation about the future. If you were the president at this point, given the fact that he revealed a couple of days ago, we've run out of bullets, the big bullets that we like to use. What would you say to Zelensky?
Well, you know, I was at President Zelensky's inauguration. I think he was very sincere in his desire to have peace with Russia. This is after Russia had already invaded Crimea, eastern Ukraine. He wanted to do a peace deal with Putin. I don't know what happened in the intervening time period. You know, obviously Putin invaded, but you know, we need to get President Zelensky, as difficult as this is going to be. Let's face it, there have been war crimes, I mean, atrocities, people slaughtered.
Yeah.
But unless we end this thing, more people are going to get slaughtered. There will be more
atrocities.
So just
give them
the 20%
of the country,
Senator?
Give them 20% of the country and just say okay?
Pardon?
Give them 20% of Ukraine and say, okay, you can keep it?
I'm not going to lay out the conditions. We have the Minsk agreement. Somehow we need to bring this war to an end.
You heard right. Fox is trying to end the war. Just give Putin 20% of Ukraine. That'll solve everything, right? I mean, Hitler was going to stop at 20% of Poland, right? And as for running low on ammunition, yeah, there's a war going on. When the 4th of July hot dog eating contest takes place, Nathan's runs low on its supply of wieners. But they're making more, and what we need is a united front against Russia, not these hackneyed peace proposals and an effort to defund law enforcement. This concludes Russian evaluation of news from the United States, specifically comrades Tom Tiffany and Ron Johnson. Do svidaniya. To do something a little bit different this week with our friend Joe Zepecki. Normally we're talking about various headlines in the news, but we're going to spend some extra time talking about healthcare and a group that he works with, and then a couple of topics very specific to healthcare. Joe Zepecki, good morning.
Hello.
Hey, nice to have you here. You know, so often people hear you in the context of working with a group called Protect Our Care Wisconsin. And not only was Protect Our Care part of an event with Congresswoman Gwen Moore last week, but also put out some new polling on Wednesday about how people feel about who should be writing policy about healthcare, Republicans or Democrats. So before we get to both of those things, what can you tell us about Protect Our Care?
So Protect Our Care is an advocacy organization that was born shortly after the Affordable Care Act, because people understood that the opponents of the march toward freedom and a healthcare system that is more just and works for more people and is more affordable was going to be opposed at every turn by Republicans, by big special interests, you know, whether it's pharmaceutical companies, drug makers, et cetera. And so for more than a decade, Protect Our Care has been sort of at the forefront of the fight to preserve, protect, and defend the Affordable Care Act, which was historic, landmark legislation, and it is so important to fight to protect the gains that we've made and also to continue to build on it. And so Protect Our Care both defends the Affordable Care Act and celebrates the additional strides forward we have made, including under President Biden. And so we do that by educating the public, trying to hold bad actors and those who are trying to undo the progress we've made accountable. And it is easily the most rewarding work I do.
And when you say build on it, I always think it's important to make this point, and I have for over a decade. Nobody, when the Affordable Care Act first passed, said, that's it, mission accomplished, it's all done. That there were always going to be ways that it either needed to be modified to fit the times or improved upon. But as far as that polling goes, what do you want to tell me about the poll that came out this week about what people think about who should be writing healthcare policy?
Yeah, and so one of the things that we know influences public policy is public opinion. And right now, we are at a moment in history where, in the wake of the Inflation Reduction Act, passed through Congress without a single Republican vote, but signed into law by President Joe Biden anyways, there are big changes coming. Finally, after three decades, Medicare will be able to negotiate using its bulk purchasing power for lower drug costs. $35 a month caps on insulin for seniors on Medicare are a part of the Inflation Reduction Act. Vaccines like shingles are now free, no cost out of pocket for seniors on Medicare. So these improvements to Medicare were central to the progress made on healthcare in the Inflation Reduction Act. And we are hearing Republicans in Congress talk about unwinding them, undoing that progress. And so Protect Our Care commissioned a national poll with more than 700 respondents asking not D or R questions, but about these policies. you know, the policies themselves, do you approve or disapprove of this? And what we find is that the Democratic agenda on healthcare is enormously more popular than that of Republicans, including more than two to one among critical independents. And so when you ask them these questions, you know, do you want to risk ending Medicare every 5 years, as Republicans like Rick Scott and others would propose doing? 78% of Americans are opposed to that. 77% are opposed to eliminating requirements that insurance companies cover preventative health care. These are screenings for mammograms and other and cancers. The free vaccines I just mentioned, you know, 74% opposed taking them away. And so on issue after issue, what we find in the healthcare space is that Democrats are, you know, where the American people are, and Republicans' attempts to undo the progress we've made are deeply, deeply unpopular.
So Protect Our Care held a news conference, a little press event, to highlight one of those advances that you mentioned, and that is that Medicare finally can negotiate, you know, drug pricing with Big Pharma. But can you tell us a bit more about what do we mean when we say final guidance on Medicare negotiating lower drug prices?
For reasons passing understanding to myself and, you know, what I would say normal folks, there's been prohibition on Medicare doing that type of everyday negotiation that every American can benefit from for more than 30 years until passage of the Inflation Reduction Act. And so now we are coming up to the first time that on, for this first round, 10 drugs will be able to negotiate a better, the federal government will be able to negotiate a better rate on. And so this guidance that comes from the Department of Health and Human Services and the Center for Medicaid Services, CMS, will inform which drugs are selected. And this is where the really smart, wonky folks, you know, get involved and say, okay, what drugs are they going to be? The Protect Our Care policy analysts believe that 5 of the 10 drugs are likely to be Imbruvica, Enbrel, Xarelto, Januvia, and Ebrance. Now, those are 5 drugs that Medicare recipients spent more than $16 billion on in the year 2021. So if you can negotiate a better deal on just those 5 drugs, and in fact, it's going to be twice as many of them, you are saving hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. And as for folks who care about the fiscal house of the United States, they're concerned about long-term debt and spending, this is a way that we can reduce federal spending while ensuring that seniors have access to the medications they need. It's such a win-win-win. It is hard to fathom why anybody would be against it.
Well,
but Gwen Moore is all for it.
And she is. And so I was going to say, to that end, let us play a little bit of what Congresswoman Gwen Moore said about that.
We need a healthcare system that's responsive to people's needs and not let the profits of the pharmaceutical companies be the determining factor. If a doctor wants to see you on a certain regimen, that ought to be available to you. You deserve the benefits of Medicare, which are just awesome. And under the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, not only are we bringing down the cost of insulin, but other drugs that and co-pays. One of the things I love about this legislation is that no matter what, benefits will be capped at $2,000 a year, so that cost won't be a social determinant of health. And I just want to say that not only does the Inflation Reduction Act provide affordable medications to people, but it actually reduces the deficit by billions, hundreds of billions of dollars. And just, you know, excuse me, Joe, if I'm getting to be a little bit partisan here, but not one single Republican voted for the Inflation Reduction Act when all the time they're always talking about, you know, needing to reduce the deficit and talking about inflation. So this bill deals with not only inflation, but it also deals with access to drugs, and it reduces our federal deficit. So I think that this is something to celebrate.
Joe, I'm betting you agree.
Amen to that. And leave it to the Congresswoman to remind me, one of the benefits I forgot in the Inflation Reduction Act is that right now, seniors on Medicare still have to pay out of pocket for some medications. Soon, that will be capped at $2,000 a year. That's another benefit of the Inflation Reduction Act. It's another reform in healthcare. To the point about profits for drug companies, I just want to, one of these drugs, Enbrel, the list price is $82,000 a year. That price has grown by 346% in the last 15 years. Since 2008, a 346% increase in the cost of that drug. Now, listen, the research and development costs were already borne and made back. I know people are paying too much. There's been some concern around inflation, although we're seeing some relief from that. But 346% in 15 years, get out of here.
Yeah,
this is what this legislation will prevent it against.
And the Congresswoman noted that as well when she said,
we're not trying to have pharmaceutical companies go into default. We value the production of these life-saving drugs. The government participates in R&D credits. Right now, I'm on the Ways and Means Committee. An expansion of the R&D credit is one of the things that's on the table. So we're not trying to send these companies into ruin. We just want a fair price. And $197,000 a year, we don't think is a fair price for the individuals who need this drug to save their lives, nor for the federal government to pay this kind of a premium price, just so that pharmaceutical executives, can earn egregious amounts of compensation.
And so, Joe, the Congresswoman said, pardon me for getting political for a moment, but I can't say that I blame her based on the price increases that you just talked about.
Yeah. And listen, these drug companies are not at risk of going to the poorhouse, right? When they have literally hundreds of millions of dollars to spend lobbying in Washington, they're doing just fine.
Now, in the little press event as well, you talked to two gentlemen who were there, one of them, Lewis Franklin. I don't know if you recall much about, either of the gentlemen, but I want to play this bite about, people should, especially, Republicans who didn't vote for the Inflation Reduction Act. He was asked, what would you say to Republicans like that? And this is what he had to say.
I would say to them, how would you feel if you was in the shape I was in? Don't get as much money that you got. And I worked over 40 years on one job, and I've been working from the cotton field up until then before I just couldn't able to go back to work because of my knee replacement. Be compassionate and love. What God teaches us to be, love each other as you love yourself. Thank y'all once again for listening to me. Y'all be blessed.
Joe, I know that when he finished saying that, it came back to you. You were moderating the event, and I think you were genuinely touched by the words that he and the other gentleman shared.
I was, and it's exactly why we include those folks in these types of events. It is very easy amidst the politicking and the big numbers that get thrown around to lose sight of why this stuff matters. These are people's lives and livelihoods and ability to remain healthy so that they can experience all of the joys of life, from hanging out with grandkids and hopefully spoiling them rotten to going, see a parade on the 4th of July or enjoy some fireworks. And what we find is really important is to center the real people who are impacted by these policies, because even if Republican members of Congress can't be swayed, we know that the American people are, because we are at our core a decent people who want folks to be safe and healthy and well.
And that's why we're going to give the last word to the other gentleman there, Ricky Chesser, I believe his name was, and just give a listen to what he had to say.
I would just like to say that we all are created equal, and I am my brother's keeper. And I think the government should stop working for these big pharmaceuticals companies and work for the little man, like me and Lewis, so that we can all live. A man that worked 40 years and now he struggles to get the things he needs so he can live out the rest of his life in comfort. But when I close, I like to just quote one Bible scripture, if I may. The Bible said that the love of money, not money, but the love of money is the root of all evil. And when evil raises its ugly head, people suffer. That's all I have to say. Thank you again.
I know his thank you was directed at Gwen Moore, but I really think it should go to anybody who worked on getting the Affordable Care Act passed. And the folks who did not, I hope they take his words to heart.
Me too. And I can't say it any better than he did.
No, and that's a good place to end it right there. Joseph Pecky, thanks for letting us shake up the script a little bit, but I thought those were some great comments to share. Have a great weekend.
You too. Talk to you next week.
When we come back, today's history lesson and music break. Right after this, you're up north. Regular part of our vocabulary now, a hard day's night, but it wasn't until Ringo Starr came along. The Beatles have been recording music in studio for a good chunk of the evening and into the wee smalls, and when they were all done, Ringo said, though, that was a hard day's night, and eventually became the title of a song that was released on this day in 1964. A lot of birthdays today. Patrick Stewart, the actor, is 83. Whether you think of him as Captain Picard or all of the other many roles that he has served in. But Patrick Stewart, 83. Harrison Ford, 81. Still getting it done. He's got the Indiana Jones movie. He's got a TV series. Just an amazing talent. And thankfully in good health still at the age of 81. Also 81 today, born the same day, is Roger McGuinn, the leader of the Byrds. You know, we had several hits in the late 60s. Those of you who are littles, and you'll know what I'm talking about, you are fans of Tony Kornheiser, the former sports writer turned host of ESPN's Pardon the Interruption, and has his own podcast. He is 75 years old today. Actor Ken Jeong is 54 years old today, both a comedian and an actual medical doctor. All right, let's see. The song that climbed to number three in Great Britain this day in 1966 was from Ike and Tina Turner, and it was a landmark. It, of course, was the epitome of the Wall of Sound from Phil Spector. It only peaked at number 88 in the United States when it first came out. But again, climbed to number three in Great Britain. It earned them a gig opening for the Rolling Stones. And then so much more history unfolded for Ike and Tina, and then thankfully just for Tina later on. This was a hot, dark day that became a hot, dark night in New York City history. On this day in 1977, amidst a period of financial turmoil, social turmoil, then along comes an electrical blackout lasting nearly 24 hours, leading to widespread fires and looting, uncertainty, and a never-ending supply of stories from that long night of the New York City blackout. The number one song this day in 1974 was from George McRae. George McRae's Rock Your Baby was number one on the charts for 2 weeks, starting this week in 1974. This was the day in 1985 when the Live Aid concerts took place in Philadelphia and London to raise money for the hungry in Africa. You had the Beach Boys, you had the Four Tops, Paul McCartney, Tina Turner, Elton John, David Bowie, The Who, Queen, Eric Clapton, Bob Dylan, and many more all taking part. And I tried to record most of it on cassette tapes, you know, the way that you'd record Casey Kasem doing American Top 40, because I was sure that if somebody had, you know, all of these tapes of this Live Aid concert, you could eventually turn them into something and like either bootleg them or sell them or whatever. But that would have taken a lot of, shall we say, post-production work. And so those, however many cassette tapes, 8, 10, 12, I lose track now, from sitting there watching this thing for hours and hours and hours, all the tapes went into a shoebox. I have no idea what became of those tapes, but clearly we now have this thing called YouTube, and you can catch Live Aid anytime you want. This day in 2004, Jimmy Buffett finally gets a number one album, a collection of duets, including the title track with Kenny Chesney on License to Chill. Leave me alone, I've got a license. License to chill. It was on this day in the Watergate scandal, 1973, that Alexander Butterfield revealed the existence of a secret Oval Office taping system to investigators for the Senate Watergate Committee. Again, just a landmark moment, just blew the barn doors off of the Watergate investigation, which was a lot of, you know, secondhand information, shall we say. And then there it is, the firsthand info of a president secretly recording people in the Oval Office. And in doing so, it, of course, helped show, here's the president in his own words admitting to the things he's being accused of. Of course, that also happened with Donald Trump during the first impeachment. He was right there on the phone, but Senate Republicans did what Senate Republicans are going to do. Dr. Kristen Lartley joins us now from are you still in the desert Southwest, or are you back in the Great North Woods? Where are you, little globetrotter?
Oh, baby, I'm up north where we all love to be.
Oh, good for you. So how were things in the Southwest for your first, what, week or two?
They were very hot.
Uh-huh.
It was so hot. When I left Phoenix yesterday, it was like 114 degrees.
That's not compatible with human existence, you know, to do that for that long a period.
Apparently, there are some flights that were being canceled because the planes weren't certified to fly under those conditions.
Wow.
Can you imagine, like, your flight being canceled because it's too hot?
Because it's too hot. That's insane. That's crazy. It is. Hey, while Aaron's here, now I don't think you heard our previous segment, Kristen, but we talked with Joe Zepecki about how Medicare can finally negotiate drug prices and what a benefit that is. Well, it turns out Mr. Zommers here has spent a lot of time working in a pharmacy and can attest to how crazy it is to have to explain to people, you know, yeah, your insurance doesn't cover this, right, Aaron?
Yeah, it was heartbreaking to see all these people who, like, hey, my doctor said I need to get the shingles vaccine because I'm at risk. And they're like, oh, that'll be $200. And then you have to get another one in 6 months. And they're like, I can't afford that. And they just have to go home. Or worse, if somebody's on some of the drugs specifically he called out, like Xarelto, that's a blood thinner. If you miss one day, you could just die. And then Medicare, once you cost them a certain amount of money, you hit a coverage gap known as the donut hole. You have to pay your way out. So you might have to pay up to like $2,000, $3,000, even more for 1 month of medication, or you just die. Those are the two options.
Hey, we see this all the time. Hey, I have to honestly say that I have to ask my patients when I prescribe them a medication if they are able to go pick it up. And I know that many people, even though they say yes, they just don't because they can't. I mean, folks, I'm sure that many of you have been in this situation where your doctor or your PA or nurse practitioner writes a prescription for something for you and you go to the pharmacy and it's sticker shock and you just walk away thinking, how can I live without this? And in the back of your head, you think, well, I'm doing okay now, so I can just, you know, muddle through. But that's certainly not the best thing for you.
Yeah, that's not how it's supposed to work. And that mm-hmm. our healthcare system is still set up that way is insane. It's all about the politics. And politics strikes again in Iowa. Kristen's going to stick with us and be joined by a fellow OBGYN from Iowa to talk about the state's new 6-week abortion ban right after the top of the hour news. We'll be back. You're up north.